It's a dream to talk to you about the Dream album. Congratulations. There's so many lovely arrangements. I guess my first question would be, you do so many lovely performances and have written a book. How do you find time to compose?
Well, most of it's done on planes, hotel rooms, sometimes backstage at concerts when I don't want to practice the piece I'm about to play on stage. I've often written stuff right there in the dressing room. So, many years ago when I started traveling around playing concerts, I decided not to watch television in hotels. And I pretty much kept to that. And so that's the time that I used to write.
There's so many lovely personal connections, too, not just with your music, but I think the style, and I think it's so inventive. Is it one of those things that when you work these through, is it a bit physical? Is it a bit intellectual? Do you like to do this at a keyboard? Or tell us a little bit about transcribing tunes with a new flavor.
Yeah, well, actually, I'd have to say that most of the pieces, in fact, all of the pieces that I've written or transcribed on this record are kind of shavings from the table, if you like. They're not my central compositional interests, which are the four sonatas that I've written for piano, or the cello sonata, or other bigger works. These are sort of pieces that I've sometimes tossed off quite quickly, even in a day or something like that. Many of them do take place at the piano, and I think this is something that we learn from the jazz musicians, the whole world of improvisation. And I think with many composers, of course, even Chopin apparently was the most amazing improviser. And I love that anecdote that someone said, he published four ballades and they're wonderful, but you should have heard the ballades he improvised at our evening soirees. So I can't do that level of improvisation, but certainly germs do come out of that. And with something like my transcription of Blow the Wind Southerly, this beautiful folk song made famous by Kathleen Ferrier, I had a score of that. I played it through on the piano as it was published in the score, and then I started tinkering with it and adding my own harmonies and decorating it and taking out some of the things to make it more simple. And I think that transcription was done in a couple of hours. So that's, one example.
There are some lesser-known composers on here, and I was curious, are these things that you run across when you're, looking in a manuscript somewhere, or is it, something or other that a friend comes and says, "Oh, hey, have you seen this Amigas piece? Have you heard, my grandpa's work here?"
Yeah, well, all of that, really. I mean, I'm always on the lookout. I mean, a bit like a journalist is always on the lookout for a good story. I think I'm also on the lookout for things like this. So, yeah, with the Stephen Isserlis, his grandfather, I have a piece of his, Julius Isserlis. He was a very distinguished Russian pianist and moved, I think, first of all to Vienna and then eventually moved to London, when things got hot for Jewish people in Vienna in the late 30s. And then he spent the rest of his life in London, where Stephen's father was also then living. So I was talking to Stephen. He's a good friend, and we were having lunch, and I was about to go and record this record, and he said, "Well, would you like to put some of my grandfather's music on there?" And I thought, well, let me have a look at it. So he posted some through my letterbox, and I like this lovely little piece called In the Steps, and so there it is. It's what is it, 1 minute, 40 seconds or something? But that's very much what this record is. It's tiny little slivers of things. It's like samples, that you might get of different desserts. It's not a great big piece of chocolate cake, but it's 20 little taster pieces of different styles.
Well, I guess that sort of naturally segues into my next question of the idea of, if you perform a Brahms sonata, or if you even the Brahms quintet or whatnot, you have sort of this sort of large canvas, and there's lots of little details, but it's a larger work. Putting together all these little pieces that might be a minute, might be 2 minutes, is it different approaching to that? Is it all these little details that come together, or is there sort of an overarching to Dream?
Well, I think that everything that's worth playing is worth doing with great attention and care. And I don't play any music that I don't think is worth playing at this point. I mean, sometimes in the beginning of your career, you have to do things because it's what's asked of you and so on. But I believe in everything now that I play and record. But of course, we shouldn't forget that Brahms himself wrote small, one might call them salon pieces. Of course, they're at the very, very highest possible level of that. But at the end of his life, he wasn't interested in writing sonatas for the piano. He wrote all these little intermezzi and capriccios and fantasies and you know, and all those wonderful pieces at the end of his life, which is actually my next CD that I'll be recording is all of those late small pieces by Brahms. But yeah, these are pieces often which were written to be played as encores. Some of them were written to be played in the home. A composer like Chaminade, Cécile Chaminade, is a female French composer, wrote hundreds and hundreds of wonderful little pieces sounding more difficult than they are, which of course is always nice. And they were written for people to learn and play in the Victorian home. And some of them, I think, are gems. Many of them are a kind of routine. But this is the Scarf Dance, a very, very beautiful little piece that I did on here. And actually, I added my own ending to this. So although her ending is very straightforward, I added a little extra, I don't know, 20 bars of decoration. So that's very much in the spirit of these pianist composers that we're talking about mainly with this record.
I think if I were doing some of these, I might be tempted sort of a la Glenn Gould, maybe to hum along to the Desert Island Disc theme or, you know, the songs that my mother taught me. Were there ever times you caught yourself, you know, playing around with these orally?
I don't tend to sing the tunes. Sometimes it can be a grunt or two if there's something very arduous happening. But I think that the great key is, and actually it's interesting that you mentioned singing. I think this is what a pianist dreams of doing, is singing at the keyboard. You know, the piano is a percussive instrument. It's kind of a bit reluctant to give you that singing. You have to coax it out of the instrument. But for me, when a piano sings, it's one of the most beautiful things and sounds that I know in the world. And so most of the pieces on this record were all about that vocal quality that my instrument has.
Well, they're absolutely lovely, and we're so tickled that you have recorded a dream album, and we'll look forward to that Brahms. If I may, I might talk to you a little bit about writing and your novel. How's it going? How have you been? I know you're going to be there in New York. If you haven't already, you're about to do a signing and reading. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did that actually on Monday. So that's all happened, and I was reading extracts from it and doing an interview about it. It's been a project. It took me a couple of years to write and then another year in the sort of refining level of that. But now it's published a few months ago. It's called The Final Retreat. And I put a lot of myself into this book, although it isn't an autobiographical book in any way. But very, very broadly and simply, it's a story of a priest who is in a state of despair and is being blackmailed by a male prostitute, and he goes to his bishop in great distress, and the bishop is sympathetic, and he says, now, before we sort any of this mess out, I want you to go on an 8-day silent retreat, and while you're there, keep a notebook, a diary of what's going through your mind during the time. And so actually the novel is his notebook whilst he's on this retreat.
Folks can find out about that at stephenhuff.com. It's the Final Retreat. And we hope you'll again explore a little bit more. There are all sorts of great stories I'm sure you could come up with on paper or computer, as it were.
Yeah, well, there's a number of things planned. I mean, I have a book that's we're in the final stages of editing at the moment, which is due out next year. I'm not sure that I can say too much about it right now, but that's being published in August, I think. And that'll be mainly a book of essays about music, actually, all sorts of things to do with playing the piano and practicing and traveling and so on. So that's a little bit lighter hearted than this very depressing story of this priest.
Well, I guess I'd end. My final question would be talking a little bit about social media and these days of all the things you do. I know that you tweet that folks can share with you at Huff Huff on Twitter. And I was curious if that's a great outlet. I know, obviously, our government certainly is involved in Twitter. I don't want to get into that too much, but I was going to talk to you about your use of Twitter.
Well, I've always enjoyed two aspects of it. One is shaping a small number of words to make something poignant or piquant or anything else. I love writing poetry. And when I started Twitter, I actually treated my tweets really like a short poem, like a haiku. But then I think it's spun off more over the recent years into connecting with people. I do enjoy the connection that I've had with people on Twitter. I've made a number of friends there, and I've reignited old friendships again, and just made some very interesting contacts with people, particularly writers and so on, and have been led to read and listen to many things through people's suggestions on Twitter and through that interaction. And it's been, I would say, 99% a positive experience. Very occasionally you'll get some crazy person writing weird things and so on, but you know, it's very easy to ignore that on Twitter or you know, mute that person. So I'm not too worried about that. But I think it's what I like about Twitter more than Facebook, which I don't do, although my publicist has a sort of official Facebook page. But I think Twitter gives me intimacy with people that I don't know, with both of us completely in control. It doesn't let you inside my private life, which I feel very important that I have a part of my life that people don't see, whom I don't know. But it allows me to show as much of that side of me as I want to. And so I value that. I like the connection. After all, a concert is communication. It's, if there's no audience there, no concert is taking place. So I think Twitter is a wonderful extension of that public concert giving.
Well, we enjoy reading and listening to you, and appreciate you taking a little bit of time today to speak with us.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.